Hello, everybody. It's a little Mo for the kids. As you all know, I like to introduce the show with some Mo. This is the Hudson Valley Top Talk Show. I am your host, Ken Landon. I do this the third Tuesday of every month. And it's a lovely day outside. And I'm happy and honored and privileged and all of those wonderful, wonderful, big, big words that I can use to have the one and only Jeff Chief O'Neill here today. He finally found his way up here. How you doing, Jeff?
Very well, Ken. Thank you so much for having me.
We won't get it. Well, maybe we will talk about the story.
Maybe we should.
Because it was kind of interesting. I had Chief scheduled to come on the show. I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 months ago.
I think it was February.
Was it February?
Yeah.
And
maybe March. Big snowstorm,
right? He's out of Peekskill. You know, you're living in Peekskill now, right?
North Peekskill.
Yeah. Okay. Peekskill Brewing Company is where Chief brews his concoctions. I'm not allowed to say product, from what I understand. I don't say product anymore.
Well, you could say beer.
You could say beer,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
But anyway, we had him scheduled to come on the show a while back in February. He took the train up from Peekskill, and you tell it.
I connected with an Amtrak train in Poughkeepsie, and then somewhere along the line there was another train that was bound to Albany, I guess, that had broken down. So our train stopped, and the entire other train disembarked and got onto ours, and that whole process took well over an hour. So I think I got here just about at the tail end of your show.
But wasn't the ironic part of it was that you were actually stopped on the tracks, what, 50 yards from
the
stop?
Yeah, they wouldn't let me. No, it was a little further, maybe quarter mile or something, but they wouldn't let me.
But you could see the train station, right? So, yeah, so we've been trying to get Chief on for a while now, and he's very, very busy down there in Peekskill. And we're gonna talk about what you're up to at Peekskill a little bit later on, but what I'd kind of like to do here is just kind of go backwards. And, you know, obviously your passion for beer led you to where you are today. But why don't you kind of like give everybody an idea of how it all got started? I don't even know way back when.
Oh, sure. Well, I started, you know, homebrewing when I was college age in my 20s. And I wound up moving further and further out west in the 90s and landed in San Francisco and lived in a house that really had completely ideal homebrewing conditions, like a basement with a floor drain and a laundry sink and a room for a kegerator and a backyard that was kind of tiered. So I got really heavily into homebrewing, and at the same time also worked at the 20 Tank Brewery, which was one of the first California style brew pubs and one of the first places that really made what I think of as hoppy American, you know, modern American hoppy ales.
This is, when was this? In the late 90s?
In the late 90s. In 98.
Wow.
Yep. And then worked in the kitchen there at the 20 Tank. And, you know, they let us clean stuff for them in the brewery every once in a while. And then from there, I got a job on the packaging line at the Gordon Biersch facility that is still in San Jose. And that's a really modern German-style brewery that they had built just a couple of years prior to that.
No kidding, really?
Yeah, and I worked there on the kegging and bottling lines, and that was a real, like, gave me a real idea of what a, you know, production brewery was like.
Was that the kind of, like, I'm looking for, like, the time when you said, this is what I want to do?
Well, yeah, sure. In order to do that, I had to, my commute was really, like, ridiculous. I lived in San Francisco, and went, you know, biked to the Caltrain station at 5 o'clock in the morning, and then took like a 90-minute train ride to San Jose.
Is that right?
Yeah. So it was really something that I really, you know, had to come up with a lot of energy and a lot of I was highly motivated to do it at the, you know, at
yeah,
that
you have
time.
To be
yeah,
to do that.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, definitely got my that enthusiasm definitely got my foot in the door for sure, and then. From there, I worked at Jupiter, which was in the East Bay, and that was owned by the same family that owned the 20 Tank and Triple Rock, which is still there in Berkeley, and Jupiter is as well. And I was the brewer at Jupiter, which then kind of went into a cooperative agreement with Drake's, which is in the East Bay in San Leandro. So we moved all the equipment from Jupiter to Drake's. I was there for a couple of years, and then I went to moved to Ithaca, New York.
These are all names that I've never heard. Drake's. Mm-hmm. Now the place you mentioned, 20 Tank? That
20 was, Tank, yeah.
That was the name of it.
Close. It's called the 20 Tank Brewery, and it was a very successful brew pub. Like I said, California-style
sure,
brew
yeah,
pub.
Yeah.
Great fresh beer, pizza, you know, simple food. Cool spot, like really like that industrial brew pub feel. One of the first places, and it was a classic.
I was going to say it was like brew pubs were almost unheard of back then. Right?
Yeah, they lost their lease during the tech.com bubble when the housing market just became ridiculous for the first time in San Francisco.
Right.
So they were open for 10 years and they closed in 2000 because their lease just went through the roof, and a startup internet company moved in, and they were bankrupt in 90 days.
Yeah, and that was it.
Yeah, and they kept the equipment there as, like, props for their internet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's too bad.
Well, that equipment all got moved to Drake's, ultimately.
So it all went to Drake's. Yeah. And that's where you – now, did you have an assistant – kind of brewery, or you know, a lot of guys work up from obviously the basement, you know, washing kegs, cleaning mm-hmm. kegs, sanitizing. Is that something that you did, or did you kind of
sure when I was at Jupiter, I started as the assistant, and then the guy who was the head brewer left to work at a winery, so I was the de facto mm-hmm. head brewer after that, and then we went into rolled it into Drake's. Where that was my, you know, that was my role at Drake's, was to do most of the dirty work. And then even when I started at Ithaca, I was washing kegs and loading boxes for, years.
Really?
Sure.
Really? See, I didn't know.
Sure.
I get to learn.
I didn't wake up as, you know, as...
Chief?
As this, yeah. I didn't just wake up one day in this chair and you're...
Poof, I'm in
radius
Ithaca.
In your studio here. Which is lovely, by the way. This room is quite nice.
Yeah, yeah. These guys are doing a great job at GXC. Shifting and moving some stuff around. So it's always something new going on here. But, so essentially you became the head brewer at Drake's.
No, I was not the head brewer at Drake's.
Oh, you weren't?
But I was a brewer there.
Okay.
And we were a small operation. There was just two of us. But we made some great beers. In fact, just as I moved to Ithaca in the summer of 2002... Drake's IPA won gold medal at the GABF in 2002.
Right on.
Yeah.
Right on. How big a system was out there at Drake's? That was a production?
That was a 15-barrel, yeah, 15-barrel
strictly production.
Yep. And we had just started bottling right around that time, around 2000, 2001, bottling a little bit. And now they've grown probably tenfold over the last few years. They're probably a 30,000 barrel brewery now.
A question I probably should have asked you. Where are you originally from? Are you from the West Coast?
I was actually born here in the Hudson Valley.
Oh, really?
I lived in Poughkeepsie for the first 5 or 6 years of my life. And then moved to Binghamton, where my mom had grown up. And I went to, you know, high school and everything in Binghamton. And then I moved out west later on.
Did you... Were you kind of on the job taught, or did you?
Yeah,
did you
mostly on the job, but I did a Siebel program.
You did
as well.
Siebel. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's usually how it goes. It seems like that's the track. Everybody kind of the passion of it more is passion driven than anything else.
Yeah,
we always talk about.
No, when I started doing it, it didn't seem like it was something that was a career. I mean, it was a job to do while you were young and able to do that heavy duty work.
Yeah.
A lot like throwing drywall around, right?
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. I'm feeling the pain of that now. But all I wanted to do is make beer eventually, you know.
Sure. I know that feeling.
And I just got finished loading a bunch of kegs before. I'm like, why am I doing this again? My back? What? You know, it's not easy work. It's definitely not. I'll speak for myself and a lot of the other guests that I had on here, and it seems to everybody has come to the same, you know, has the same mindset. You don't get into this business if you're money driven, you know. I think it's a passion driven thing. Obviously, you've done a lot of, you've brewed out West, mm-hmm. which is a completely, a style or
No, I wouldn't necessarily say it's a style, but I think the culture of craft beer is older there, more mature. I mean, it's more more a part of everybody's day-to-day existence than just maybe like a few years ahead. We're definitely seeing it change for the better.
Yeah,
here, especially around New York City.
I think that I guess we always talk about the West Coast style IPAs, which is a more, I guess, hoppier sort of kind of beer. Maybe I never really, I kind of got it a little bit,
it's a quick and dirty way to describe. I mean, there's more nuance to what beer tastes like then.
I mean, and obviously most of the ingredients hop-wise are coming from out that way.
Sure, but I wouldn't call that location where most of the hops are grown the West Coast. It's more, it's Eastern Washington, Oregon. Yeah, hundreds of miles from the ocean.
Now, you spent some time, and I always talk with Hutch, you and Hutch are close friends.
Mm-hmm.
He's always, Jeff's doing this, Joe, and I know you go out there.
Mm-hmm.
He tells me you go out there and you harvest your hops or you spend some time with the hop growers and stuff.
Yeah, it's awesome.
That's got to be pretty cool, man.
It's
that all about?
I started doing it 4 or 5 years ago, visiting the farms that we were buying hops from at Ithaca and really trying to nurture that relationship with the farmers. It's the same, the same ethos as knowing your local farmer or your local,
sure.
Yeah. And they, I think, they appreciate it a lot from their side as well, the effort required to get all the way there and talk to them, see what they're doing, understand. It's the same way I always love having suppliers, customers in the brewery so they can get an idea of the scale of what we're doing, what the challenges are, some of the interesting and unique things that each of them do. And it's just it's just beautiful there, especially at that time of year. And getting to get out there and choose the actual lots that we're going to use, it really helps.
That's really cool.
It's a great tool.
Yeah. And you could paint the picture for someone who comes in and say, hey, man, I'm friends with the growers. I've been out there. I know where this is coming from, instead of just a voice over the phone or emails,
right, exactly,
and stuff like that.
Exactly.
That's really cool.
And a lot of people are doing it. And so the vendors are doing programs like, I think they call it Humulus U or something like that, where they'll bring folks out for a few days and to learn about, the processing and farming operations.
So you,
I highly recommend it. You guys should take that trip.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Hutch has been talking about that. He's like, you got to get out that way. And it's one of those things. It's always time and money, but you just got to do it. You really do.
Well, it changes your, perspective on why ingredients cost what they do and,
You hit it right on the head.
What you can reasonably expect from them.
Well, yeah, and what they're actually doing to get the product or the hops to you. Same thing as what we do at the restaurant. We have all our local farmers bring in their own.
Sure.
We know. I've been to the farms. I've seen the cows and the chickens and, what these guys are doing and what it takes to get it to us.
You guys use all local meat?
Yeah,
that's great.
Local meat.
That's great.
Yeah, local as much as possible. Produce. Huge. We probably work with, I would say, probably 10 farms,
great.
10 different
That's
farms
really
throughout
great.
The area. And what's great about that, too, is all the farmers deliver
sure.
their own stuff.
Yeah.
You're getting the people who are actually in the fields, they're pulling this stuff out and they're, cleaning it up and they're bringing it to you in their muddy clothes and boots.
Right.
And they're dropping it off into the kitchen. It doesn't get any fresher than that. And the same thing with the hops that go into the beer. I think that's great, man. But, yeah, so you were out at how long was your stay at Drake's?
I was there from 2000 to 2002.
2002.
And then we moved to Ithaca in 2002 and was there for 9 years.
Yeah, that was
until 2011.
That was a big stay over there.
Yeah, we had a pretty good run there.
I'm going to we're going to take a quick break. I think Jeff's got some beer here we're going to taste. Maybe, maybe not. I'm going to play a quick song. And then when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about what Chief did at Ithaca. And if anybody out there knows the beer that Chief brews, and top notch. I mean, you've won awards all over the place just recently, right? Didn't last year at GABF? or
I think it was last month.
Last month at GAPS. I don't even know what year. Last month, and you won a year before. So we're going to talk about all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, go grab a beer, right?
Yeah.
Go grab a beer, sit back, relax. We'll play a tune. We'll come back and we'll chat a little bit more. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Okay, welcome back, welcome back. I think we got caught with our mics on before when we went, well, not we, me. I forgot to hit the controls when we were talking. Hopefully nobody heard. It was all good anyway. Welcome back to the Hudson Valley Top Talk Show. I'm Ken Landon. I am here with Jeff O'Neill from Peekskill Brewing Company, just south, about an hour and a half south of us, talking about what he's up to and where he's been and what he's done and the great beers that he's brewing. But I guess we fast forward, we're now up to 2002. Mm-hmm. You're heading...
It's still a long time ago.
It seems like forever ago, right? So you're heading from the West Coast.
Yep.
And you, I guess you applied and got hired.
No. Actually, we moved to Ithaca for my wife. We had just gotten married to work on her PhD at Cornell.
Oh, okay.
So it just so happened that at that time, they were growing a little bit and needed an extra pair of hands. But I was part-time there for a few months maybe before it really... before I really caught on.
So now you came. So you went from the.
I worked at a winery that harvest too.
So you came out. You came back to New York and didn't really have any thoughts or kind of ideas about getting back into the beer industry. Or
well, I mean, I stuck my foot in the door there at Ithaca
just to.
But they were really the only game in town.
Right on.
So you know, it wasn't. I didn't have a lot of choice, but you know, I had grown up near there and confident that we would make something work and. Lo and behold.
So you worked your way up?
Yep, worked my way up. And after having been there for a few years, the guy who was ahead of me left to go back into chemical engineering, and I kind of inherited the head gig and took it from there.
What would you think, 2003, 4, 5?
5, 6.
5, 6?
5, 6, yeah.
So you did your grunt work there
yep.
for quite a few years?
Yep.
Those guys aren't they even growing even more out there? Is it
yeah, be? Sure, sure. I think they're probably twice as big as when I left 3 years ago.
I think I first kind of met you back then at a lot, you know, we all go to these festivals,
oh, when
folks.
When you stole Hutch from me, right?
No, that didn't happen that way. That didn't happen that way. Hutch didn't want to get up at 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the morning anymore. That's what happened there. But yeah, I think we kind of crossed paths. I had done a lot of work with Chuck at Butternuts. It's okay. You could chuckle. You could chuckle, Chief.
I don't
know.
I have no chuckle.
I know when you first had your can of Dilly Dally, it was kind of exciting, right? Or pork slap. Well, Dilly Dally came later.
I didn't know Dilly Dally.
Not too many people
did. I don't
remember
that one.
Not too many people did. It didn't last too long. But, yeah, I guess we kind of started.
Sure, we'd run into each other at festivals and whatnot.
And, yeah. You know, I know you were putting out, you know, great beer at Ithaca. And you kind of, I guess, maybe I'm wrong, but you kind of took that place to, obviously, you have your own brewing philosophy. I think you do anyway. I think a lot of people, you know. That drink your beer, whether it be the sour stuff. I know you're a big sour guy, which is one of my favorite beers. It's kind of why I started drinking that beer that you were brewing there. I know Flower Power and what was it, the
Cascazilla?
Cascazilla.
Yeah, that was the first recipe I was ever allowed to write at Ithaca Beer.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So, but eventually you started brewing some of the big sour ales that were out there. We
sure.
were just talking before. I have a Brute that's in my refrigerator and. God, it's got to be 10 years by now, right?
Not 10. I think the first batch came out in 07.
07.
Would have been brewed in 06. So, you know, brewed 8 years ago.
So is that...
It's held up really pretty remarkably well, the bottles I've sampled.
I've seen
lately.
Some of them on eBay and stuff, you know, hundreds
oh, really?
Of dollars.
Well, that's
so.
Not. I don't think eBay does that anymore. But but yeah, one time, those beers were trading in that... gray market there.
So that just gives you an idea of, you know, the popularity of those styles. I'm just curious, and obviously you were given the reins over there and you started writing your own recipes. What kind of, how did you your philosophy, or I should say your brewing change over to those types of beers? Not so much change, but kind of got you into the sours and the different styles like that. Because
I don't know if I'm even particularly into any one style, but I like really sort of bright and clean and flavor forward beers that are expressive and really show off the ingredients. And I try to, you know, use really great ingredients and stay the hell out of their way as best I can.
Right on.
So ingredients and technique can really take you a long way toward making a nice glass of beer.
Now, that was those beers we were talking before, the quadruple also. That was, I guess it was the Excelsior series?
Right. We had a little side. I think they still do it. A little side project where we would do 4, 6, or 8 releases per year of one-off beers. And there was the 12 was an anniversary beer. So we made that for a few years, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. And there were a few others in there that I think were really nice beers too.
Le Bleu.
That was the blueberry sour.
That was outstanding.
Yeah, we made a few batches of that. And White Gold was one that we made that I liked. I really liked that one a lot.
Was that the one with the espresso?
No, that was a Saison sort of thing that had a little bit of a funky thing that wasn't.
There was an espresso in there too, right?
There was a.
It was a dark. I remember it was a dark.
Yeah, we made a caffeinator, I think we made, around in the first iteration of those beers. And that was a espresso Doppelbock. Maybe you're thinking of that.
Yeah.
There might have been a coffee milk stout, too. That might have been 11.
Now, all of those, the Excelsior series, those are all your beers? Those are all your recipes?
Yeah.
That's
sure.
Awesome. I mean, the beer's phenomenal, folks. If anybody can get, if I don't know. Can you even get your hands on some of that?
I think they still make some of them. I think they still make White Gold, and I think they still make an anniversary, but I can't. I'm not 100% sure. Yeah.
I know they definitely shifted their gears more towards, I guess, the flower power, and don't they have an apricot or something? They're doing crazy.
I think they might. They might have. They might have a beer like that.
They might. But so you were out there. What'd you say? 8 years? 10 years? Nine years.
I was there till 2011, and I just celebrated my third anniversary at Peekskill. I started on November 1st of 2011.
Wonderful, yeah.
And of course, you saw the before and after of the building that we.
I have not been to the new place.
What?
No, I have not.
That's
been.
That's ridiculous.
There. Yeah, it is.
I'm a little insulted.
Yeah, I don't really get out much. Yeah.
Well, now you really have to.
I can remember. That's a song, right? I do remember,
though.
You
saw it before.
I saw it before, and I do vividly remember stopping down there one time, and I think it was your first or second day there.
Maybe.
And you were brewing on that little system.
Yep, it was very, very small.
In the corner. And you were scratching your head. I know there was a lot of issues with that system down there at one point, and... You know, it's like anything else. It's, you know, you're learning a new system.
It was really challenging. In fact, in a lot of ways, that thing made me a better brewer.
Is that right?
Yeah, sure.
Wasn't there heat exchange
nonstop emergencies?
The nonstop emergencies. You really get to know your system.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know?
But I remember stopping down there and seeing you, and you were in there and crammed in. And folks, I mean...
Smaller than this studio.
It was smaller than this studio.
Oh, maybe approximately the size of this studio.
Because I remember you pressed up against the glass and trying to, I don't know if you were mashing it. I don't remember what you were doing, but you barely had enough room to turn around. And I kind of poked my head in there, and you were kind of like, yep, this is what I'm doing now.
Well, it was a much bigger, you know, much bigger thing happening on the side.
But I kind of have not so much that. Our system at Crossroads, that was also a Defiant system there, right? Wasn't that a Neil?
No. Neil was involved later on.
Okay.
But I don't think he had anything to do with the...
Well, he was brewing a lot of the stuff for Peekskill for a while. Wasn't he doing some stuff there
before you got there? Before my time.
Which is kind of... We have that same relationship there. Neil was doing some stuff for me before Hutch came along, and even back before the Crossroads opened, in between kind of Butternuts and Crossroads.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he did some small batch stuff for me just to get some stuff out on the market long time ago. It's probably, God, it's got to be...
More than 5 years ago.
Right? 10.
Oh, wow.
10, 12 years ago.
What brand was that?
It was actually, we were doing a trial on the Outrage.
Okay.
But it was under Landon Ales.
Okay.
We were kind of using that, like, kind of to just get out in the marketplace. So, yeah, I was green. I didn't really know much about the industry and what was happening. And I was just kind of feeling my way around, you know. I guess the same as most of us do in the very, very beginning. But yeah,
sure, no matter what you're doing,
it's a long road. I look back too, and I say, you know, it's been 12 years since I've entered into the business, and you know, learned a lot of things and trial by fire and stuff breaking down, and
sure.
You know, that's how you learn. But so yeah, you guys have been doing phenomenal things down there, and I was at the old Peekskill Brewing. I have not been to the new building. I hear it's absolutely gorgeous. You had I don't know if you want to use the word luxury, but you had the opportunity to design your own system there.
Yeah.
Tell me how was that?
I mean, well, it was really cool. So the building is just, it's a fortress, like literally a fortress. It was an army storage warehouse that was built in the 20s. And, it's just a real square stone building that's, you know, poured concrete post and beam, so it's a real heavy duty kind of stone.
The infrastructure was there. Like we had kind of talked, we were just talking off the air on how it's so important to have all the right elements to a building.
Well, it was gutted, and it had you know, rudimentary power and.
Oh really?
Oh yeah, we had to upgrade the water in order to sprinkler the whole thing to modern code.
So this was a major.
Yeah, it was
major,
a big project.
Big project.
But we really turned a 100-year-old building into a modern brewery and restaurant. So I fell in love with the building the first time I saw it, and there were lots of different ways that I saw that we could take advantage of the height and the kind of cubic space in there. And what we ultimately did was put a cool ship in our third floor. Which is something that's a little different. It's a throwback vessel that, you know, 100 years ago pretty much every brewery had, and now, you know, only a handful have them.
You're going to have to, for anyone who doesn't know that's listening, you're going to have to explain what a cool ship is.
So a cool ship is a shallow, open pan, essentially. It's a very big pan to pump your wort into after you boil it. To allow it to cool down. And before, you know, before there were modern, like, refrigeration technology, this was how you would create a lot of surface area to volume and shed heat out of a wort and get it down to fermentation temperature. So we use it after every wort that we make right after we finish boiling, which is really kind of cool. No pun intended. but it's an isolated room in the third floor that fills with steam, and we have ventilation fans that suck the steam out. And we do a lot of, most of the beer we brew is our hoppy ales. And we do a lot of heavy, late hop additions in those beers. And I think we're able to do it at a lower temperature than a lot of other systems allow for, because we've already shed a bunch of heat out of it.
Right.
So I think we volatilize somewhat less of the aroma compounds in the hops. That's my working theory anyway. And it gives us some house character for better or worse. But I think our beers definitely do have like a structure to the hopping that's a little different.
Was that something that the cool ship, is that something that you... you wanted to incorporate into what kind of gravitated you towards that? Obviously, it's
just
an old,
like, this story. Really old school thing that still has real practical application, and we actually are able to use it in different ways for other kinds of beer as well. Like we're able to be faithful to a lot of different brewing traditions with it. One of our flagship beers is called Hop Common, and that's a quote unquote California style lager. or what a lot of people call a steam beer. And one of the one of the legends about why steam beer was called as such was that, or at least Anchor Steam, was that their cool ship was on their roof, and when they pumped the wort up onto the roof, the whole roof would steam. So they called it the steam brewery. Yeah. So that's one of the legends about why it's called steam beer. But it's one of our core beers, and we tell that story that we brew it in that same
old-fashioned
way that it was made in the Gold Rush days. We've also done fermentation. If you leave it in there for long enough, it will cool all the way down to room temperature. Uh-huh. We typically are only in it for about an hour, but when we leave wort in there, it will cool down. And we've fermented some saisons, some sort of wild style beers, like lambic inspired beers.
Sure,
up there we've made a couple of those, and it's just been really interesting. It's really cool to get to watch the yeast grow on top, and some of the formations that the wild fermentations have taken have been really, really fascinating to watch.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool stuff.
So yeah, it's just a little twist. You know, there's so many people making great beer these days that you got to do something a little bit different, at least.
Yeah, but you had, you know, you designed the system yourself. So I mean, how was that?
It was great. It was great, and we had a partner. Fabricator as a partner who was really open-minded about my ideas, because I have a lot of, I guess, idiosyncratic ideas about things. But you know, in this climate, breweries are opening left and right, and most fabricators are swamped with orders and just want to bang out their stock drawings. And Metalcraft in Portland, Oregon, was really open-minded about thinking outside of the box and setting it up to really, you know, fit into the space that we had.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I understand that you're a multi-level brewery.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stuff is gravity,
mm-hmm.
right? That was also by design?
Mm-hmm. Sure, and my initial idea was to really put the grain and water all the way up top in the building and really flow downward. But that became impractical once we were really in the space and thinking about how to really best use it in the end. The ceiling in the first floor is about 15 feet.
Right on.
And then the rest of the building is a lot lower. So we were able to fit the brew house and our bigger tanks, which are 30 barrel tanks, into the first floor much more easily and without having to do a lot of structural.
So it just made much more sense that way.
Yeah.
No, very, very
cool. But we do. We like to tell that story. We mill. We definitely take malt upstairs in our elevator and mill into a grist case that's suspended above the brew house, and you know that'll always we'll always be able to get up there. And we fill the kettle without a pump for the most part. We flow from the mash louder ton into the kettle.
Right down.
You know, the whole philosophy is just to kind of be gentle.
Yeah.
To the ingredients as you're moving them through the process.
Yeah, instead of pushing them through a pump or whatnot. Yeah. Gravity fed. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
That had to be fun designing your own system.
Yeah, it really was.
To get the opportunity. Not many people do. Like you said, they're busy punching out these, you know, stock.
And there's really only a couple of minor things that I would change. I would make a couple of the drains a little bit bigger just to facilitate cleanup. But there's very little functionally that I would do different. And that's... You know, spent a lot of hours on the details of those.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a decent sized system. You know,
yeah.
I don't know any other. When I had talked to you about a cool ship, I had no idea what that was. I had to look it up myself and read about it. And I don't think there's many breweries in this area that even have. I don't know of any.
No, there are maybe. I mean, it's hard to say with what's going on in craft beer right now, but there are half a dozen maybe that I know of. But most of them use them for fermentation.
Fermentation.
Most of them are using it in that lambic style scenario.
Since you've been, what is it, 3 years now, Peekskill?
Yep.
And obviously you stormed right out of the gate. You won a bunch of awards.
We've been fortunate to have beers recognized.
The... We're drinking right now the Amaze Balls.
Amaze Balls, yeah. That's one of our pale ales.
It's pale ale. Some of the ones that won the awards are?
This one did. This one won a GABF medal in 2013.
Nice.
Silver medal. Higher Standard, our Imperial IPA, was at the first Tap New York when we opened the new brewery. So that was 2013 as well. And just last month, we got another medal for NYPA in the pale ale category. So there's a little theme.
NYPA.
Yeah.
I like it. Congratulations on that.
Thanks
one.
A
that
lot,
was
man.
Just a month ago, man. Yeah. So you're doing great things down there. It's great to
Having
hear.
Having fun.
Yeah, you know, you got to have some fun. I know, you know, it's... I have a thing in my office that says, hey, we make beer for a living, you know? You want to kind of... Because it's... You know, look, man, it's like anything else. It becomes a job. It gets monotonous. There's trials and tribulations and, you know, you're constantly battling things, like you said before. What's broke today, this, that. And it gets daunting at times, you know?
Sure, but if a broken pump is the worst thing that happens to you in a day, it's maybe not the worst day ever.
It would usually be two broken pumps. Well, I mean, even on a brand new system, I'm sure there's stuff that goes awry every once in a while.
Yeah, you know, wear and tear parts. And I think we're about at that point, actually, in our brewery, where some of the gaskets are getting chewed up and going through and replacing some of that stuff.
But, yeah, 3 years is about the lifespan of some of that
stuff. Well, yeah, we've been using it just about two. We started brewing in there at the end of 2012.
Yeah, and anybody who hasn't been down there, including myself, has to get down and visit you guys.
Please, yeah, we're a full... full-service bar and restaurant, and we're open every day.
What do we got?
From noon on.
10 to? You know what? I'm going to play. I got a quick two-minute song I'm going to play, and then we'll close out. We'll finish up because I got two more questions I want to ask Jeff. Right, what is it? 5-2? We got till 3? Yeah, so let me play this quick tune, and then we'll be right back. All right, we're going to cut into this tune here because we only got a couple minutes left, and I wanted to get a few more minutes with Chief. And one of my questions is I had written down, and I've always wanted to know this.
Oh, boy.
Now that I got you on the spot. How did you get the nickname Chief?
Oh, that's easy.
were you scared there for a minute? Because anybody in the industry knows you. Actually, someone had said to me, Jeff, and I had no idea who, you know, and everybody knows you as Chief.
When I was at Ithaca, there were at one time three of us named Jeff, and I was not the most senior one. So he got to be called Jeff. And the woman who ran the our retail store took a lot of phone calls. This was like back before we had cell phones, maybe. And she took a lot of phone calls for us. And she had to, you know, yell over the bottling line or, you know, a pump or any other sort of noise that would have been back there. She had to yell to get people's attention. So she just started calling me Chief.
Really?
Yeah.
And that was it?
Yep.
Oh, man.
It stuck.
It did stick.
It's not the worst. It's not the worst nickname.
No, it's not the worst nickname for sure. But that's awesome, man. So yeah, everybody knows you as Chief, and it stuck. So that's good.
Yeah.
So before we head out of here, why don't you kind of just tell everybody what's happening? What are you up to? You know, we got any new beers coming out? Peekskill Brewery. Where you located, all that good stuff.
Yeah, so we are just one block north of the Metro North Station in Peekskill, so we're really easily accessible by the Hudson River line. We're also right off of Route 9, kind of right between Route 9 and the train station, right by the Peekskill waterfront. And like I said before, we're open every day from noon on, full-on restaurant and bar service. And right now we are right in the middle of our sort of rolling out our strong lineup of winter beers, which include a barley wine that we just brewed in collaboration with the Plan B Farm Brewery, and our take on a Baltic porter called Moscow on the Hudson. And we have an Imperial Stout that's called Vaporizer. And our fourth strong beer that we're featuring here through these winter months is Higher Standard, our Imperial IPA. So come on down and warm yourself up with a sampler of those beers.
That sounds wonderful. I want to thank you again, Jeff, for